Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kiddishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Thunderdrum Lighttail off ABBA record CD entitled Thunderdrums Number 2. The name of that powwow song was For Our People. Usque, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Today's broadcast is Program 6 of Wolf Mountain Radio Smart Meme Conference Interviews. This special series features conversations with young activists and several elders who participated in a national Smart Meme Story Gathering. Yad Kiddushin Native Center was honored to be invited to. In today's program, we focus on a very special organization, Smart Meme, and its youth leadership program, STORY, Strategy, Training, and Organizing Resources for Youth. Yad Kiddushin Native Center is an intertribal, cultural, environmental, social justice, and news media organization, is dedicated to promoting a global culture of peace, justice, and ecological health for all life. This vision is at the core of all of Yad Kiddushin Native Center's programs and projects. One major emphasis of our work is mentoring and encouraging youth, our future generation, to empower themselves to work for a better world. We do this by networking with various student and youth movements involved with cultural, social, racial, economic, environmental peace, justice, and anti-globalization issues. One example of Yad Kiddushin Native Center's support of youth is our journalism project, Communications for Community Activists, which trains young activists in messaging and media skills. Messaging, media, and campaign promotion skills are essential for getting one's voice heard. This is the case for many communities and concerns that have often been unnoticed in society or not reported on by the mainstream press. Communications is especially important when fighting for justice. As example, when government or industry actions threaten the well-being of a community and our Mother Earth. Another organization that shares this mission is Smart Meme. Smart Meme is a national holistic strategy project that links storytelling and social change to strengthen grassroots community groups. Smart Meme, like Yad Kiddushin Native Center, believes in the power of organizing through the power of memes, which are ways of expression of a community's narrative. Narrative is another term for storytelling, a way of giving voice, a way of expression. Story is a lens through which we process information we encounter. Cultural, emotional, experiential, political. It is the way a person or community can portray themselves or how others view them. Memes are bits of cultural information that tell our stories. They are a way of communicating a culture's history and wisdoms, current situations, and vision for the future. Depending on who tells or how a narrative is told, that story could unite or divide people, obscure certain issues, or spotlight others. A story can inform and enlighten, or it can also be used to deceive, mislead, cover up, or falsify the truth. Understanding communications, analyzing and examining messaging, which has so much influence in the state of the world, especially now in the information age of the 21st century, is a critical necessity if we are to create a global culture of peace and justice. A good example are the numerous public relations campaigns by business and industry that should really be called public deception campaigns. Smart Meme, like Yad Kiddushin Native Center, has supported a range of grassroots issues by providing strategy organizing to various activist groups around North America. Yad Kiddushin Native Center over the years has had the honor to partner with Smart Meme at several of these events. One very special gathering was Smart Meme's national training known as Insight Insight. Insight Insight was a 3-day training retreat focused on organizing, strategy, storytelling, and reflection. It was a space for youth to plan and strengthen their activism. I was invited to be one of several elders to share experience and promote intergenerational and cross-cultural learning. Smart Memes 3-Day Insight Storytelling, Movement Building, and Creating a Cultural Strategy Training was held in the traditional homeland of the Penacook Indian Nation in what is now present-day central and southern New Hampshire. This northeast woodland Merrimack River watershed is a beautiful area of forest, hills, lakes, and ponds, very similar to my neighboring Wabanaki tribal territory. The conference site, Owl's Nest Lodge on Bradley Lake, is in the shadow of Gawasiwajo, Windfall Mountain known as Mount Kearsarge. Gawasiwajo is a place I know well due to the nearby Mount Kearsarge Indian Museum, where for a time I often lecture to visitors on the culture history of Northeast Woodland Indigenous peoples. Smart Meme Strategy and Training Project was founded to support struggles for justice, peace, democracy, and an ecological future. Smart Meme are people who believe in the power of ideas, the power of collective wisdom of communities, and the power of stories to change the world for the better. These are values and principles Yad Kiddushin Native Center believes in, and is why Yad Kiddushin Native Center is honored to network and support Smart Meme whenever we can. We urge all of our worldwide listeners to likewise appreciate and support Smart Meme. My guest here, Yad Kiddushin Native Center's information table, is a fine African-American elder, Miss Frances Borden Hubbard. It has been a very special honor for me to meet and spend the past few days with Miss Hubbard here at the Smart Meme Conference. Last evening's session was an elder's circle where four of us older activists were asked to share experiences and offer advice to the young people participating in the Smart Meme Conference. Frances's story was very inspiring. She is a grandmother, lecturer, organizer, poet, storyteller, and scientist. Above all, Ms. Hubbard is a lifelong activist involved in various justice movements. It is my great pleasure to welcome Ms. Frances Borden Hubbard to Wolf Mountain Radio.
Thank you. I'm so delighted that you invited me to come into your land of birth. It is gratifying to me to hear from you the history of your people as I have never heard it before. My name is Frances Borden Hubbard. That's my given name. I currently reside in Springfield, Massachusetts. I am a grandmother of two granddaughters, 16 and 12 years old, respectively. And I have been, in these past few days with you, trying to deepen our understanding of how we see the struggle for social justice for the peoples of the earth.
In today's program introduction, I mentioned that last evening's conference session was the Elder Circle, where four of us older participants spoke about some of our experiences as activists. The elders panel included yourself, Asian American writer Bob Wing, and Betty Hurst and myself from Yad Kiddushin Native American Center. I think the four of us hope that our Elder Circle stories will encourage those students and youth here at the Smart Meme Gathering to further dedicate themselves to global justice. Mentoring and supporting young people is a very important responsibility of those of us who have spent many years in community organizing and movement building. As elders offering guidance to the youth, we must also listen and learn from them. They will be the ones to carry on the justice struggles and be the leaders of our movements into the future. Many of the young people I spoke with this morning especially appreciated hearing some of our personal background and experiences from being people of culture. Frances, would you please share with our worldwide listeners some of your personal background as an African-American woman.
Yes, you called me elder, which is a term that I am referred to lately more often than not. I am an African-American woman, daughter of Louis and Emma, and granddaughter of Peter Francis Esco Benjamin Franklin Satchel Neil Reed, born on the eastern shore of Virginia, so-called Virginia, in the year of 1861. I am also the youngest of 13 children, the youngest of 82 cousins on my maternal and paternal sides, and I have been fortunate to be descended from a long line of people who have struggled for the rights of people to own and maintain land, be treated with dignity as human beings. Since my earliest time, my recollections are of my mother and father and sisters and brothers and their friends and neighbors struggling for one thing and another. My earliest memory is of struggling for the rights of children to have a whole day education in the school system of New Rochelle, New York. They had kindergarten, and in certain areas of the city, the less affluent, they would try to propose that children enter school at age 5 and go to school a half a day, where in other parts of the city, children were going to school all day. There was also appeared to be a preference in terms of whether, if you were going to school a half a day, whether you would go in the morning or in the afternoon. So that's a very early memory, about 5 years of age. I have a memory that is even older than that, of sitting by the coal stove in the kitchen of our home on the eastern shore of Virginia, Accomack County. I think the name of the area was Craddocksville, and I recall the house being on stilts. That area of the country is full of inlets from the Chesapeake Bay. And I recall my father beckoning to my mother to go to bed. I was sitting on a little chair next to the stove, cozy and warm. My father beckoned my mother to go to bed and then took me up on his lap. I noticed that there was a shotgun next to the door. And I recall a short time after my mother left the room, a knock came on the door after some rustling outside. People rode in buggies and wagons then more than they did in automobiles in that part of the country. I think it was around 1935 or 1936. And a man came in whose name was Claude Drummond. He was the person who came at the end of the planting season, I have learned since, to cheat my family, all of my sisters and brothers and my mother and father in the so-called potato picks who came over from Suffolk, Virginia, out of their earnings. And I, as my father took me to the door, I could hear his heart beating in his chest at a pace I was not accustomed to. I was familiar with my father's heartbeat, falling to sleep on his chest more often than not. And I recall understanding that my father was angry and that he was determined. And the white man came and sat at the table. And I was on my father's lap with my head on his chest, listening to that heart and watching that white man cheat my father and having some understanding at my childhood level and determining right then that I would do something to protect my father from that white man's cheating. Later in my life, I had the opportunity to, at school or in the neighborhood, do something that was in service of the community or families, and I would gladly take up that mantle. And so you might call me a student leader. You might call me a girl who was active in the community. You might say that I'm a girl who's through whose illness, bronchial pneumonia at age 7, hospitalized in New Rochelle Hospital in a segregated ward that had all the black people, pregnant women, men with tuberculosis, little girls with pneumonia in oxygen tents, all in the same room. And then as a child ill from polio. My brother Cecil and I, he's my brother next to me, he and I contracted polio in 1941. We were both hospitalized at Grasslands Hospital in Valhalla, New York, in an isolation ward. I was 9, he was 11. They believed in wrapping children in warm wrappings during that time, thinking that that would help them to heal and help them to not be lame. It was very uncomfortable. We were very frightened. And it's from what that bed that I heard the announcement that the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor. Pearl Harbor, in my little 9-year-old mind, was right near where my family was, near Hudson Park, Rye Beach, Glen Island. Pearl Harbor, that must be where they were bombing my family. I was terrified. I was wondering, how could somebody bomb people? Certainly they wouldn't want to bomb children who were sick in a hospital. That was not right. I realized that. Fortunately, my brother and I were not so-called lame from our polio. When I came out of the hospital, I was full of poetry, writing composition books filled with poetry. I remember the first lines that I wrote. Outdoors, outdoors, as Japan's soldiers land on Pearl Harbor's shores. I don't recall the rest of it at this moment, but there was passion in it, determination, the kind of passion, the kind of determination that was reminiscent of my father's heartbeat. So my life has gone on, and I have been fortunate to be a part of a student movement in high school, going to American Friends Service Committee work camps. I was fortunate to have Wyatt West and John Kemeny as counselors, fortunate to be taught to listen to the inner voice and to acknowledge the inner light in each human being, to be in peaceful settings, encouraged to think collectively about ways to make a world that we dreamed of, and from there and other places, discussions with my family about the rats that were biting children in Harlem schools when a man named Jensen was the superintendent of schools in New York City, where my nephews went to school. Watching the neighborhood women organize and stay in the school on the corner of 118th Street in what is now called Malcolm X Boulevard. Sit-ins to bring the attention New York City Board of Education about the danger that was confronting children as they tried to go to school. During that time, I met my sister Thelma B. Moore's friend, Queen Mother Moore. She had been the campaign manager for Vito Marcantonio. She and my sister and many, many other people took children and teenagers and church people and workers and community leaders and ordinary people who worked and people in tenements and people who were being cheated at the grocery stores and people who were being evicted from their apartments, and they would arrange groups of people who would, the people would take the furniture out, they would replace the furniture. They fought for people to have housing, jobs, people to be hired in the stores along 125th Street. They would meet and regularly. They were righteous and they were powerful and they were determined. So my understanding of the way to be in the world is to struggle to correct injustices wherever they arrive.
Mm-hmm. Across the lines, dare to go under the bridge, over the tracks, separates whites from blacks. Choose sides, run for your lives. Tonight the riots begin. back streets of America. They kill the dream of America. Little black man gets assaulted for no reason why. News prints the story. Racist tempers fire. Next day starts a riot. Knives and guns are drawn. Two black boys get killed. One white boy goes by. Across the lines, who would dare to go under the bridge, over the tracks that separates whites from blacks? Suicide, run for your lives. Tonight the riots begin. Black streets of America, they kill the dream of America. Little black gets assaulted. No one know her name. Lots of people hurt and angry. She's the one to blame. Across the lines, who would dare to go under the bridge, over the tracks that separates whites from blacks? Suicide, run for your life. Night the riots began. Black streets of America, they kill the dream of America.
Singer-songwriter Tracy Chapman off her 1988 Elektra Records cassette entitled Tracy Chapman. The name of that song was Across the Lines, referring to race relations in America. Tracy Chapman is one of my favorite singer-songwriters. I had the honor to become friends with her when Wolf Mountain Radio was based in Boston, Mass., broadcasting on WMFO-FM. Tracy was a student at Tufts University and from time to time was a guest on Wolf Mountain Radio, as well as another weekly program I co-produced entitled Radio Free South Africa that focused on the freedom struggle against apartheid. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kadishi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. I am talking with African-American elder, Miss Frances Borden Hubbard. We are participating in a Smart Meme National Training Conference here in the traditional homeland of the Penacook Indian Nation, now called Central and Southern New Hampshire. Smart Meme trains student and youth groups across the country in ways to better their activist campaigns through strategy organizing and communication skills. Smart Meme is a fine grassroots organization that I have had the honor to network with. Frances, in last evening's Elders Circle, I found it very interesting that we both spoke about the importance of understanding how what may be considered a particular or separate issue, such as civil and human rights, women's equality, labor, health care, economic disparities, protecting the environment, and a major concern of Yad Kadishi Native Center, Native Sovereignty and Self-Determination as examples, that they are all part of the struggle for global justice. Therefore, activists need to be educated on both the history and interconnections of contemporary justice movements. Mahatma Gandhi and Dr. King exemplified this important point. In our presentations last night, we both shared how much of our understanding about global justice came from visiting other peoples
especially in the so-called third world. Would you please share some more thoughts about this?
In my education, I have learned that the people's struggle for self-determination and for liberation has to be linked with people globally, that our struggles are, in a sense, one struggle. Struggle for self-determination, the struggle for liberation. Kwame Nkrumah studied at Lincoln University in Oxford, Pennsylvania. And when he was studying there, he would often come to New York City and often would have meals at my mother's table in New Rochelle, New York. And in the gathering would be a number of people who supported African students who were in the United States, helping them to feel at home, but also familiarizing them with the life of ordinary people in New York City and surrounding areas. And they would talk and I would listen. And I knew then that our struggle was tied up with the people's struggle in Africa. And then, later in my life, much later, I was working at City College of New York, at the School of Biomedical Education at City College, and got a telephone call from a female voice inviting me to participate in a commission to El Salvador. I said, yes, I would go to El Salvador. I knew that people in the medical field, students and nurses and doctors and people in that country were fighting a civil war, but that they were being students, particularly the same kind of students that I was teaching in the School of Biomedical Education, were being shot in the streets. They were being shot as part of teams trying to help the people who had fallen in battle in the streets. They would be considered insurgents for simply trying to come to the aid of their faculty people or colleagues or their co-workers. The young woman screamed when I said yes, I would go. She said to me, Mrs. Hubbard, you are the 50th person I called. You are the first person that said yes. Thank you very much. Comes from a tradition of when you're called to do something that you're able to do, you step up.
That's an indigenous tradition of all tribal peoples.
Thank you for reminding me of that. Well, that's the trip to El Salvador in 1980 with four other people from the United States. One of the outstanding things among many, and when I say outstanding, it's not something to smile about, it's something to be troubled about, is that what was being reported was so far from the truth. Without going into particular details, I see similarities in today's reporting of what's going on other land masses to be far from the truth of what is actually happening. So from 1980 to 2005, the reporting in that sense continues to be distorted. In terms of China and that visit, that was 1981, and that was with a group of academic women who visited five cities, if I recall, in China. And there I saw and felt an affinity to the land that I had not felt before, even in El Salvador. You know, there is a way that one feels as if one is going home. Sometimes we step on land someplace, and to our surprise, we feel at home. I don't know what all of that is about. I think that it may be about people's spirits and their struggles and their wisdom and their culture, being present in everything that is associated with that land. And so I was extremely attentive, extremely aware, in ways that I have, up to that point, not known. It was as if some quality of my life had fallen away. I didn't understand it at the time it was going on. It was only when I returned home to my apartment on the east side of New York that I found myself reluctant to go outdoors. I didn't understand the reluctance, but then when I went outdoors for the first time, I realized that I was afraid. Everything looked unfamiliar and seemed to be unfamiliar. I got onto the subway and I looked up and saw a sign It was a big dog dressed up in a trench coat, sort of like Sherlock Holmes, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And it had an apple, and the dog was saying, "Take a bite out of crime." And it struck someplace deep in my soul, and I began to weep. What I have come to understand is that I had lost my defenses. I had lost my fear of being attacked in China. It's not to say that there is something so totally different, but I simply perceived that I did not have to be defended in China. And what was the defense about? In my understanding, I had dropped my mantle of protection that I'm forced to carry, yes, as a woman of color, as a woman of African descent in the United States, which I consider to be my home.
As we continue our conversation, I first want to say again, thank you for sharing your heart and your friendship and your knowledge and wisdom with me and our worldwide listeners. We're here at this gathering where there's a lot of youth, and the purpose for me being here, from my perspective, is to help up-and-coming young activists, student activists, with ways of thinking of how to fight globalization and to encourage especially people of color youth, our young brothers and sisters, to step up. And as Bob Marley likes to say, stand up for your rights. We are now in the 21st century, new millennium, new time, where I see good things but also bad things. We were talking earlier about this being a time of world history where there's really a lot of possibilities for change and difference. Would you please share your thoughts on that?
I'm particularly encouraged in that thinking at this gathering here with these young people who are themselves organizers, who are themselves activists, who are warriors in the struggle for social change, and who have invited elders such as you and myself, and you've made it clear that you don't determine yourself an elder. But we have been called here to tell our stories about organizing struggles that we've been engaged in as a way of helping young people to be encouraged that there are ways that organizing can change things. And in that capacity, we are also listeners to their stories.
Yes.
And indeed, we have heard compelling stories this weekend, have we not?
Yes. In fact, what they are facing is really very different from what you and I would face. I will say it this way. Growing up in a segregated North on Indian reservation, where it was until I was 14 years old before I ever went into the front door of a white man's restaurant, and where there were still signs posted, no Indians, and where the KKK had their organizations targeting Native people. They were not called the Klan so much as organizations like the Interstate Congress for Equal Rights and Responsibility, another group called PAR, which some of our listeners know about because of that organization's anti-Indian fighting on the fisheries wars in the 1980s. I think the war and our enemy, in a sense, racism, was much more open and apparent. We kind of knew where we stand. The young people these days, I think, the battle's a little different. Would you agree to that?
I think that the young people today have fewer people at their access, other people of color, who, with them, this is most of the young people here in conversations we've been a part of. They are frequently in organizations which are determined to be progressive organizations, where they are maybe isolated as one person of color, and where there is pressure upon them to express themselves absent their culture, absent the acknowledgement of their nationality, their ethnicity, their sexual orientation, their gender. This, a moment ago, we were reminded to identify a person differently than we might have by their gender. So there are issues for them that are extraordinarily complex. and that robs them of their personhood and dehumanizes them in ways that are quite different. They are not slapped in the face with a sign. They perhaps have not been accosted overtly in racist ways. Nevertheless, what they have expressed to us is the uncomfort, the discomfort that they feel, the unease in so many places, in being self-determining, in being able to maintain their self-respect, because of what they and others call insensitivity, and with a reluctance to truly acknowledge that what they are experiencing is historically structured racism, institutionally based racism, that does not allow them the freedom of speech that they and others fight for. And here we are with this kind of duality of experiences that call upon these young people to be advocates and organizers and leaders, place them in positions that appear to be positions of advantage, and yet in those places where they are treated in ways that do not resource them, perhaps cannot support them because of a lack of acknowledgement by the well-meaning people with whom they work of what it is they need in order for them to claim and experience their full humanity. So yes, I think that their issues are different. And I think they're the same at the very same moment. I think that it has been challenging. I'll use a word that is popular. But it has caused me the deepest concern, particularly as a parent and grandparent. It makes me know that my activism, my way of being in the community needs to extend at this period in history to the support and acknowledgement and availability to these young people, and to walk with them and to be with them in ways that they are comfortable and that can allow them to heal as they struggle to create a world in which we can all be claim our full humanity.
Hey, Jana, Jo, Hey, Jana, Hoey, No.
You are listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kitichi Native Center. Yat Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their world views in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat Kitichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing Indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat Kitichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat Kitichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat Kitichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat Kitichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat Kitichi's Kinonwatakwisin Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yat Kitichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices
will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat K'tichi Native Center, write to Yat K'tichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yat K'tichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinowatakusin, to all of our relations.
The music you heard prior to our Yat K'tichi Native Center program identification was from Dene Navajo singer Louis Garney off his Canyon Records CD entitled Sacred Mountains. The name of that song was The Elders. I played that song as an honor to today's program guest, Elder Frances Borden Hubbard, for sharing her experiences and wisdoms as a lifelong African-American woman justice activist, both here at the Smart Meme Conference, as well as with my Wolf Mountain Radio worldwide listeners. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. Please tune in next week for Program 7 of our Wolf Mountain Radio special Smart Meme Interview Series. We shall conclude with a song by Oneida singer-songwriter Joanne Shenandoah off Canyon Records CD, Voices Across the Canyon, Volume 2. The name of the song is Mother Earth Speaks. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kinowatakusin, to all of our relations.
From time to time, no attention is paid to mine. I fear for you, not just for me. My heart beats on. Why can't you see? Don't steal my thunder.